This episode of the Missed Spots podcast is brought to you by Amazon Prime, the amazing service from Amazon that allows you to get free two-day shipping on nearly every item available on their website, plus access to Amazon Prime Music and Prime Video service with tons of movies and TV shows, including the acclaimed original series Transparent, starring Jeffrey Tambor. Now you can get a free three-month trial of Amazon Prime by going to missbots.com/prime. Plus, if you do that, Amazon's going to throw in a free three-month trial of HBO on your Prime Video. Nothing else you have to say or do. You get that for free with this trial as well. That way you can catch up on Game of Thrones, Westworld, or you can watch anything from HBO's amazing back catalog, like The Sopranos, The Wire. It's all there for you. After your trial, you can pay just $99 for the entire year of Prime. Trust me, that sounds like a lot, but as a Prime member myself, that money more than pays for itself in just two-day shipping after just a couple of months. So head over to missspots.com/prime right now and try Amazon Prime for free for 3 months and join what practically everyone should be a part of, Amazon Prime. Welcome back to the Missed Spots podcast on MissedSpots.com, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, and Geek Life Radio. My name is Mike, and with me as always is the Bobby Lashley to my Roman Reigns. Here's Kevin.
That makes me an entirely computer-generated image, and you profoundly unlikable.
Yes.
I'm not sure which one I'd rather be.
That's like choosing to be a murderer or a rapist. No one wants to be... Probably no one wants to be either of those things.
That's a classy way to start off the show, Mike. I'm already getting a good feeling about this episode.
Yeah. So we have pretty straightforward show for you. We're going to talk about Monday Night Raw, to where we had the return of one Dr. Shelby, and we're going to talk about SmackDown. So, Kevin, how about you take us away into this holiday-filled couple days of wrestling?
Well, the first segment of Raw basically boiled down to the fact that Roman Reigns is unlikable enough that heel Dolph and heel Drew come off as tweeners when they two-on-one beat the hell out of him. Did you get that same feeling?
Yes.
Yeah, Roman, I did read, and this was on the internet, so you know it's true.
Absolutely.
I did read earlier today that there have been internal talks that Roman Reigns is going to turn heel, and that is the way they are going to guarantee a decent crowd response or a proper crowd response when he eventually takes the title, and they want to book him as a quote-unquote cool heel. Now, Roman has, to me, never come off as cool, no. But then again, maybe I don't know much about cool. If that's the case, and let's be honest with ourselves, that is not the case. They are not turning Roman Reigns heel. So
you just made that up?
The internet made it up, Mike. Oh, I'm just commenting on it. But if that were the case, then this was a perfect way to go about it. Saying that, I never thought I'd lose the Revival. And basically just continuing to come off as profoundly unlikable, arrogant, without any... Roman Reigns has been in the main event of WrestleMania for 3 years in a row. Or is it four now or three?
Fuck if I know.
It's 7 years
in a row.
But 7 years in a row, Roman Reigns has been in the main event of WrestleMania.
Yep.
He's been the focal
round number
point.
Of 10.
Yes. 47 years. Roman is not even 47 WrestleManias, and Roman's not that old, but 47 straight WrestleManias.
Yes.
Roman Reigns has been in the main event. He is the highest selling t-shirts and merchandise. All that being said, Roman Reigns is, when he calls himself the big dog and when he says all these things about how great he is and what he deserves, it comes off as hollow because so many people despise him. All that makes him a heel. And when Ziggler and McIntyre come down and start chiding him and then beat him up, I'm like, okay, we got three heels in the ring and two of them are beating up the other guy and we don't like the other guy more. That makes them good guys. That is the feeling I got from that whole segment.
Yeah, there were two sentences that he had and they were back to back. One where he gave the Revival credit, like they're good and all, but I can't believe I lost to the Revival. So then followed it up in the same sentence with a backhanded comment. And then he said, I'm not going to make any excuses, but I had Bobby Lashley as my tag partner. So he said, I'm not going to make an excuse, and then made an excuse in the same sentence too.
And it also, if there are people.
If this is planting the seeds of a heel turn, then okay, great. But like you said, I don't believe that. So this just comes across as poor writing.
If the people in the WWE right now, the ones in charge, if they were to hear this comment, which of course they never would because none of them would ever listen to us. But if they would, they would say, Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Rock, they made those kind of comments all the time. And they did. And they had charisma and charm in a way that Roman Reigns has never, ever come across.
Mm-hmm.
There are a few people in the history of this business, Ric Flair is another one, that could be insulting and cocky in a way that came across and still be a good guy and still be a babyface. Roman Reigns simply, at this point in his career, does not have that skill set. So you're wrong. Not anyone can be Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Rock, and Roman Reigns certainly can't. He is profoundly unlikable, and his promos come off as being a self-entitled douchebag. That is basically his character. Moving on. The B-Team versus Matt Hardy. This was actually Curtis Axel fighting Matt Hardy. I'm pretty sure they just showed the segment from the week before. Is that true?
It seemed like it, yeah.
We had last week I complained that they had done the same B-team mocking of Matt and Bray and that they should have made a one-time thing and done something different. They have now done it 3 weeks in a row. It's no longer charming. It's no longer interesting. I'm out.
Yeah.
They're going to
beat it to death.
They just beat it to death. And we had actual distraction finish for Curtis Axel going over, which was better than the lucky finish. But I just, there's never any evolution. They find one thing that works once, and they're just obsessed with trying to capture that lightning in a bottle again. And it's a mistake. And that's why the Fashion Files went from being must-see television to just another cringeworthy thing to watch. Tuesday nights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know.
Preface. I don't even remember what's up next, but well, I have a feeling with that reaction.
Well, there's two things up next, and the only reason I'm mentioning one of them, because usually I don't go over backstage segments unless they have some kind of relevance, but when they put Bobby Lashley and Roman Reigns in a backstage talking segment, you have no personality v. unlikable personality. That cannot be the way that you push a feud.
Yeah.
And that's the simplest way to distill those two characters down and how uninvolved and uninteresting their promo backstage was. The big sigh for this entire show was Sasha and Bayley in their anger management class. I did not watch this. I did not watch any of this.
Good for you.
I read the spoilers of it. I got the gist. I was fortunate enough to watch this both of these episodes of Raw and SmackDown today because I was out of town on business, and I will not reward bad behavior. If your child is throwing a tantrum in the middle of the store, sometimes you have to ignore them. You have to kind of let them get it out of their system. You do not want to reward that bad behavior with attention. That is the way I feel with the WWE when they do these stupid segments with awful scripting and awful acting. No thank you. I respect myself too much.
Yeah, I unfortunately did watch these. And, you know, I was watching also the reactions on social media as well. And there were a lot of people eating this up. Now, I don't know whether it was that they enjoyed the segment or if it was this nostalgia thing of Dr. Shelby. Now, you weren't watching wrestling during the Team Hell No.
I was not.
I thought so. So, and some of those segments were pretty bad, in my opinion, back then. There were a couple that were charming, but again, this is them just playing on nostalgia of, oh, here was this couple-time character who played a therapist for Daniel Bryan and Kane coming and doing the same thing for Sasha and Bayley. It worked before. We can make it work again. And it didn't. But people enjoyed it. I don't know why. Was it just because of Dr. Shelby? I'm thinking so, because there's no way in any person's mind that this should have been a fun segment to have watched.
Sasha Banks and Bayley basically showed up in their gear to go to.
They weren't
anger
in
management.
Their gear.
It looked like it to me when I was fast forwarding through it.
They had like shirts of themselves on, which is weird.
Okay.
But they had that. they had casual pants on.
Okay, still. If you are walking around with your own t-shirt on when you're going to therapy, there's something wrong with you. Yeah. So there's that. Yeah, I cannot get over the fact of how badly they've screwed up Bayley. They had such an easy story that would have been so engaging and memorable and made a character that for the next 15 years, the crowd would love and get behind. The character could have evolved. The character could have gone from a fan who was in over her head to a competent in-ring performer to a champion, then could have turned heel, then could have had a babyface turn and re-embraced her roots, then could have grown up significantly, ditched all the kid-like stuff, but kept the heart and the drive and the integrity. All the things that could have happened with that character have been just destroyed. And these are the kind of segments that she's booked in. And they basically don't like money because they flushed a bunch down the toilet.
Yeah, that's pretty much dead on.
The Titus Worldwide, and that's the way I refer to them, the Titus Worldwide, fought the Authors of Pain. Now, this was a feud that was hinted at a week ago or a couple weeks ago. I can't remember exactly what. I think it was last week. This was not quite a squash match, but it was also not really competitive, and it made it all quite uninteresting. Thoughts?
I wasn't uninterested in this. I thought it went well because, you know, Titus and Apollo are the kind of they're the veterans by all accounts and purposes in this, and they got beaten by strong rookies pretty handedly. I could see them doing a like next week Titus and Apollo going, okay, we underestimated these guys, we got to change our game plan, we want a rematch, and then lose again, and then it'll probably be over.
I just have a problem with the Authors of Pain. Other than being two big guys, I don't know who they are. And I think, like so many other acts, they were not introduced properly onto the main roster. And I just don't know how to invest with them. They're not good enough in the ring to hide the deficiencies of their character. Not only that, even though they've had some good matches in NXT, so we know that they can work with good competition, in the NXT arena, they had different match layouts with a little more time and different kind of engagement from the crowd. We don't have any of that on WWE on Raw, so there's really, to me, not a lot going on here. There just does not appear to be a lot of upside unless they develop these characters a little bit more, because so far they've given us no reason to know who they are or to really get behind them or to really hate them. They're just big guys that have destroyed a couple jobber teams and have beaten a team that no one cares about.
Yeah, you're right in that.
And that all can be that all can be fine in ring if they give us a backstage segment, if they give us a vignette, an introduction, if they talk about the Authors of Pain domination of NXT. They have not talked about any of that. Commentary hasn't even talked about that. And I've also heard backstage stuff that there's been reports that the management has decided there are certain acts that are not allowed to be mentioned about their NXT past.
Really? I didn't see that. That's silly. They look at it as canon. It's part of them.
If that is true, and there's no guarantee it is one of the dumbest things I could ever think of.
Yeah.
You have built-in history from your own brand. The fact that you wouldn't use that, the fact that we haven't seen it for Bayley and Sasha,
yeah,
is telling.
I understand it when you don't want to bring up, like, back in the days, the NWA and WCW, ECW, don't want to bring those up. Don't want to bring up TNA and history that people have there. But not wanting to bring up something in your own extension of your company, it just sounds so weird.
It just sounds dumb.
But this goes to show what you've been railing on for ever since they came up, is they should have put them with another mouthpiece who can talk for them and explain who they are to people.
Yep, but they don't look at it that way, and they will be a non-entity within probably the next 6 to 8 months. Seth and Roman versus Dolph and Drew. Really intriguing match up here, just with so much talent in the ring. And as much as we rag on Roman, obviously, guys, we understand he's a hell of a worker. He's a hell of a talent. There's no doubt that he can go in the ring. So this was an interesting match. Ultimately, there was a DQ caused by the Revival. Dash and Dawson beating the hell out of Roman Reigns is very, very cathartic to me. You?
Yeah. I mean, I called this match and kind of the result, because technically Roman and Bobby Lashley did win, and called this last week, but I did love seeing them shatter machine him. And
this was actually the Seth and Roman Dolph.
Oh, Drew I'm match. Sorry. Yeah, that's right.
Well, I mean, we can talk about both
because that was a DQ finish, wasn't it?
Yeah, they both were. This was the Revival causing the DQ by attacking Roman, hitting him with the shatter machine. Looked beautiful. I just want to see a GIF of Roman Reigns, a compilation of those two shatter machines over and over to infinity, because I enjoyed it so much. And then the match later on, which was Bobby Lashley and Roman, we had once again a DQ where the Revival just kept on beating Roman, double teaming him, so we had to call for the bell. But in that match, Roman refused to tag in Bobby Lashley.
Yeah.
Roman's a dick, man.
Yeah, he really is.
He's just a dick. He's every football asshole that you didn't like in high school that treated you like shit. He's better looking than you. He's in better shape than you. He has more friends than you, and he knows it. That's Roman Reigns' character. How they don't get that when they continue to book him that way is perplexing to the nines.
I also added more to Roman being a dick by creating a dialogue, a fake dialogue between him and Seth going into their match, because Roman purposely wore his black and green attire instead of his typical black and red attire to match Seth and make Seth look awkward. Like, oh, wait, I thought we would match. And Roman's like, oh, do you want me to change? But anyway, that was just more of my fantasy booking of Roman being a dick.
That's the segment that we like to call Mike Describes His Tweets.
Fan fiction.
Yeah. Let's just have, let the people follow us on Twitter and then they can get that information.
Yeah. But yeah, anyway, Roman, I forgot that the first match was a DQ finish too. So, yeah.
It just, it's a very interesting thing. This is setting up Lashley versus Roman in a way.
It was announced finally.
It is finally announced, but Lashley is the more likable person in this situation. And that's a lot to say for a CGI character that absolutely does not exist.
Correct.
So I mean, they've done a good job getting him over. I thought Baron Corbin, or no, you know what? I'm not even gonna say it. Baron Corbin's mic work as a smarmy and disingenuous character was pretty solid. Baron has been a bully and a cocky and entitled bully at that for his entire heel run, starting in NXT through the main roster. Him as being smarmy and kind of shifty, I liked it. I think that Baron is a better talker than anyone will ever give him credit for. And while I cannot stand Constable Corbin and anything about his storyline, I think he hit the notes well in his mic work. And on the opposite end of the spectrum, Finn Balor continues to have some of the poorest writing. He smiles like a goof 90% of the time, and he's very uninteresting as a character.
Well, hitting on the Baron thing first, I felt like he has been pretty good on the mic, even going back into NXT, because he was kind of believable.
I agree with you 100%, but what I'm saying is a change up in his character, I think he's done well with it, and for the most part, people hate Baron Corbin, so they have kind of shit on his mic work, which I think is probably inaccurate.
Yeah, because his whole, like, I didn't go through the indies, I didn't do this, I didn't do that, it always felt so sincere coming from him, whether or not it's legit or not, but his character always made it believable. And I always thought he did a good job. I mean, he's been given a lot of bad writing on the main roster, and that's not his fault necessarily. Actually, it's not his fault. Not even necessarily. It's not his fault.
Bad writing and terrible booking, to me, is the reason Baron Corbin is not more over. I think he actually has tons of potential. He's got one of the most believable working punches in the whole business. He is profoundly unlikable. He's got a lot of good things going for him.
That's a good thing.
Yes. He's a heel. Yeah. He's supposed to be profoundly unlikable. He is not a cool heel. No. He's a fucking dick. And he comes off as that. I think that it is poor booking and poor writing that has hurt him. And the change to this new character, to me, is a missed opportunity with what he was before. But he's doing the best he can with it, and it's pretty solid.
Did you just get a message from the anonymous Raw GM?
I'm glad you heard that. Yes, I did.
Yeah, and then Finn, you hit the nail on the head. Just he looks like a goof out there sometimes with the smiling bit, and you know, it could work to a certain extent if you want to be like a smartass heel character. But he's not a smart-ass heel. We got a tease of that for a week and a half with the whole club thing. Do you remember that? Because not a lot of people do.
Yeah.
It was right around Raw 25.
This is a real question I have for you, Mike. I haven't been to a TGI Fridays in a long time because I go to good restaurants. But do they wear vests?
Well, the last time you went to a TGI Fridays, I believe, was probably the last time I went to a TGI Fridays, and it was during WrestleMania weekend last year because it was right next to our hotel.
Good point. Were they wearing a vest?
I don't
remember.
Vests. I don't either. Okay, maybe so suspenders with flair on it?
I think suspenders make more sense. I don't think they wear vests, Finn. And WWE writing staff, yeah, clever joke. Way to use it 2 weeks in a row. I
know. Oh, we're going to get it next week, too. This is going to be one of those things. This is tater tots.
Yeah, it's just dumb. The riot squad was down one member. Ruby Riot apparently suffered a injury to, I believe it was her knee. Is that correct, Michael?
I believe it is, yeah.
Without Ruby, Liv and Sarah are somehow 125% less interesting, which I do not think is mathematically possible.
Yeah, I am no rocket scientist or... I don't know.
Any other kind of scientist.
But that has nothing to do with math. Yeah. But yeah, that math doesn't work.
But it somehow is still the truth.
Yes.
Liv fought Ember Moon. Ember is really good, fast. She has all kinds of charisma and energy. She's the kind of character you want to get behind. She has real fire in the ring. And good. They let her overcome the odds to win this match. The Riot Squad is not a thing that anyone should be worried about. And I'm glad that they let Ember go over here, because her losing to Liv, even with Sarah Logan on the outside, is not believable to me.
I am with you. Yeah.
So good for them. Good for Ember Moon to go over in that situation. Tell me, I had a very solid take on Mojo Rawley last week and his mic work, and I think you disagreed with that.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think about Mojo and No Way Jose round two?
All I remember really is Mojo's got new music again.
Well, I did not pick that up. I was kind of watching it a little bit and fast forward some of the portions. Mojo basically
he cut another promo. Then he attacked one of his rosebuds. I was doing the quotes there.
Yeah, and then he did an apron spot with Jose that was meant to really up the stakes of their feud. Listen, I think this is fine. These are mid-card guys that don't really have a lot going for them. This is a segment that I was very comfortable with. It actually is proceeding with a mid-card feud that might actually make one of these guys more important. That's the whole point of this, I think.
Yeah, I did crap all over Mojo's promo last week, but you know, this is 3 weeks in a row that they've worked something between these two guys, and it hasn't just been match after match after match. So I give them credit for that and for sticking to that, because, I mean, I feel like Mojo, we really give him a hard time sometimes. And
his name is Mojo Rawley.
Exactly.
Okay.
And I think that No Way Jose has a lot of good potential in him too. And he is stuck with a really awful name. And I love his theme song. I don't care so much for the conga line thing. But they're actually doing stuff with these guys. And that's a good thing to see.
Well, I can't wait for, because what's going to happen is Mojo's going to go over with the help of the bunny. And the bunny's going to turn out to be Adam Rose. And we're going to find out that it used to be No Way Jose in the bunny costume, and Adam Rose is getting him back. And then we all will die a little bit inside. Moving on, Nia Jax and Mickey James had a match. I was thinking about this during Nia Jax's promo because I was trying not to listen to it. For two reasons. One, she is not good at promos. And two, I will refuse to forget the 3 weeks that Nia Jax was a heel in between WrestleMania and now, because I'm an adult that has an adult-style memory. And I cannot stand the fact that Nia was a bullied underdog babyface that became a douchebag bully that is now an underdog babyface again. Very annoying. But if you were to put Nia Jax and Bobby Lashley together, the amount of uninteresting and uncharismaticness of them would make them the most bland couple in the history of mankind. Thoughts?
Yeah. I also disliked that she thought that Natty coming out and helping her was a great equalizer. Like, she was like, well, I have some help too. And that, you know, pause for dramatic effect, and then music hits, and I was like, okay, where's the Bret Hart little screech going to come in? There it is. And out comes Natty. Yep, she's an intimidating force to come in as your second. This sucks.
Natalya is a former champion, is one of the best workers in the women's division. That didn't bother me as much. It is a second person when you've got Alex on the ringside. Overall, this match was uninteresting to me.
Mm-hmm.
And
I don't even remember much about the match.
I mean, Nia played, was beaten down consistently from Mickey James and sold for her consistently. Listen, there needs to be a pecking order in professional wrestling. And at this day and age, Mickey James should not be hanging with Nia Jax. Nia Jax is supposed to be a cut above the rest with Ronda Rousey. If Ronda Rousey went up and worked a 50-50 match with Mickey James, we'd all be blindly spitting on Twitter immediately. It should be a similar thing with Nia, because they're supposed to be equals. And the fact that they continue to do this kind of stuff is just profoundly frustrating.
Yeah.
Do you remember when Jinder Mahal was the man who came in peace for 3 weeks about a year and a half ago?
Yeah.
It's me too. So he was a heel because he came in peace, and then he was a heel because strictly because he was foreign. Now he's a heel again because he's the man who comes in peace.
And meditates.
Like people who fight for a living typically are. I'm pretty sure that Conor McGregor is a really peaceful guy for the most part before he tries to, punch people in the face repeatedly. I feel like, Mike Tyson, really peaceful guy. It's absolutely ludicrous.
There are honestly some legit fighters who are into meditation and into all of that lifestyle. I mean, it's not far-fetched really, but it is for professional wrestling.
Okay, Mike, you just threw a logical comment at me, and I will respectfully recognize that, but I don't like it. I don't like the fact that he's supposed to be this meditating guru kind of character, and we're supposed to dislike him for it. I don't know. Doesn't do much for me. Even though Kevin Owens makes everything 1,000 times more interesting and watchable.
See, I would have... when he first came back and he was doing that, the man who comes in peace, blah, blah, blah. And you knew it was not going to get over with the crowd. If you were able to turn that into a reason for him to be a full-blown heel, like, I tried to come in peace. I tried to be... zen like and blah blah blah, and no one accepted me for it, and just have him keep on trying and trying, but when people shit on him losing it and then him beating people up because of that kind of works. But they didn't. They just completely scratched that and turned him into, you don't like me because I'm not American. All right.
Yeah, it's a good old foreign heel.
Yeah.
The last segment of Raw, it did involve our good friend Kevin Owens. I believe the match was Kevin Owens versus Braun Strowman and a Portajohn. I fast forwarded through much of it, but that was the gist of it, right, Mike?
It was a singles match. Braun won via countout because Kevin retreated, and then. Yeah, the stuff with the porta potty.
This was not good.
No,
I don't find this good, or interesting, or watchable. It was really long and really drawn out. Mm-hmm. Once Kevin Owens made the bafflingly bad decision to hide in literally the only place he could, within 5 feet of the door he ran out of, instead of just running away.
Yeah.
I think he would have done a pretty good job with that.
Go to a bar down the street.
Yeah, come back for your car later. Yeah, this was just not good. The Braun Strowman that flips over ambulances and brutally flips over Roman Reigns' carcass, basically, on a stretcher 4 feet onto the pavement. That dude was brutal, and holy shit would be a proper chant. The guy who pushes a guy off... You could have put me in that port-a-john, and I might have bumped my elbow slightly. I mean, I understand
A foot?
Yeah.
Maybe?
Listen, I'm not saying it wouldn't be disgusting to get all that blue stuff on me. Yeah. I mean, it would be. Don't get me wrong. But let's not pretend that Kevin Owens is going to be in a neck brace next week. It was dumb. It took a long time to get around. And this is one of those great moments where we as fans get to put on our genius hats and go, this is Vince McMahon 100% because this is the kind of thing Vince McMahon finds funny. I have no idea that's true, but it makes sense when we say it.
I have no idea if that's true as well, but I have no doubt in my mind that that's true. I went to bed sad that night. Like I laid in bed and my girlfriend, who she was already asleep, she woke up and she's like, how was the rest of the show? And I was like, terrible. Braun Strowman pushed Kevin Owens, who was in a porta potty, off of the stage. And she's like, that happened? I was like, yeah. And I didn't use the word shitty in describing it. So I absolutely missed out on something there. But, and they want people in a more mainstream fashion to take notice to them. They want ESPN to cover them more. They want to be seen as viable sports entertainment. But when you do shit like this, you can't then question, why can we not reach a more mainstream casual viewer? Because you do dumb shit like this. And guess what? The casual viewer doesn't care about that. The hardcore viewer doesn't care about that. No one but Vince fucking McMahon cares about that.
And kids. I think kids really got into it.
Fuck kids. And
you know, Mike with his hot take on kids. Listen, there were people chanting holy shit when that happened. Maybe it was just because it was a porta potty and they're very, very intelligent.
It's a pun.
But listen, there is a segment of the people that might be listening to this podcast right now that are like, these guys don't like anything, and that was one of the best segments I ever saw. Listen, I'm sure there's 4 people that think that, and good for them. But it's just really bad and so contrived. I mean, just so contrived. How many times have we seen guy goes out to the parking lot and his car gets hit, or a forklift picks up the car and flips it over, or the limo blows up, or cars run over by a monster truck? We've seen all this stuff out there. But I would have even been more okay with Strowman pushing a port-a-john off a dock in the back than him dragging it all the way to the backstage back onto the stage for absolutely no reason. It still would have been stupid, but it would have been my kind of stupid, which is a better stupid.
Yeah, and that ended Raw.
It sure did, sir.
And then heading into SmackDown Live, we got to hear from Team Hell No as they talked about their out-of-nowhere reunion from last week. And I'll give Brian credit. He wasn't just going with, yay, we're all great again. Brian brought up number of things from their past that Kane had done to him as Kane tried to talk about them being so close. Brian sometimes is all of us logical fans out there, and I love it.
I really enjoyed this, and I know that this is the nostalgia thing that you rightly call out on a regular basis that we don't tend to care for a lot, and I found the reunion to be a little convenient, a little illogical. Kane is a afterthought right now, and Daniel Bryan is more than a tag team wrestler and should be at this point. But the fact that they acknowledge the fact that Kane tried to murder Brie is a pretty cool thing. I thought they handled it well. It was a meta kind of thing. Overall, this is an okay segment. But I do have a question for you, Mike.
Okay.
They were called Team Hell No because, if I am correct, before the yes chance, Brian used to say no.
Yes was first. Then it changed to no. Then it went back to yes.
Okay, so when it was no, that's when Kane and him got together. Is that true?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay, so the hell is Kane and the no is Daniel Bryan.
Yes.
Why aren't they Team Hell Yes right now?
Who knows? That would make a hell of a lot of sense.
I'd prefer it. Just saying.
Yeah.
Go on.
The Usos interrupted, make some fantastic points in their promo about why are Team Hell No getting a title match? Because they hug? Like, we can hug. We can get more title shots. Then Paige comes out and decides to make Usos versus Hell No later on. And if Usos win, they'll get entered into the title match at Extreme Rules. I think we all knew what was going to happen. They weren't going to just have the Usos beat this newly reunited team. So this was just a convenient way for them to have a match with one of the best tag teams on the main roster right now.
Not every single match and not every single storyline development needs to be the first, you know, the prime mover, right? Just because the Usos came out and would have been added to the match doesn't mean they always should be. Sometimes they should lose, right? And we see that more often than not. If this person wins, they're added to the match. 95% of the times they win. But that's not the way reality works. So I was a real big fan of this. It gave us a chance to see the Usos come out, who have not been featured on TV as much recently. It gave us a chance to see two good tag teams in there, work a good match. Big fan of this overall. This was a good way to make a storyline reason, had a lot of logic to it, to use your talent to utilize TV time. Bravo.
Yeah.
We like stuff too.
Yeah. Jeff Hardy came out to give a U.S. title open challenge. A thing that Tom Phillips brought up multiple times about Jeff Hardy is doing an open challenge 2 weeks in a row. How is this going to play out for him and his body? And is this going to be too much for him? John Cena did that for like 3 months straight every single week. And he was just fine.
Yeah, but did anyone ever call Jeff Hardy Super Jeff Hardy?
Possibly. Maybe in like his own little world.
But you get my point. John Cena can do it because John Cena is John Cena.
I thought it was a very strange way of building this match. But Miz is the one who responded. They got a pretty good reaction from the crowd. And we got a pretty good match from them. And Jeff Hardy wins. As we found out later on in the evening, Nakamura is getting a title match with Hardy to reignite this feud that they quasi-started, but then Nakamura was bit by a dog. And
only
it's
a professional
one of the
wrestling
weirdest
folks.
Things
only
I've ever heard.
Yeah.
And has to miss some time with it, but apparently he will be ready to go for Extreme Rules, so they are building towards that. We did get a promo from Nakamura later on in the evening to build towards that, so that was nice that they are able to add something in to keep this going in Nakamura's physical absence.
Well, I also thought it was really cool of them to do that promo in the ballroom at the Holiday Inn, which I think is a good good advertisement for the Holiday Inn. So that was a cool little spot.
It wasn't just a backstage looking thing.
There was like a weird lighting fixture on there. It was a very bizarre looking backdrop for that promo.
I'll have to go back and look at that.
Odd and somewhat charming.
We then got the inaugural New Day pancake eating contest. Hey, you know, 4th of July is coming up. You got to have a food related segment on the show. So luckily, this was rather brief, this whole part of it, as Sanity came out and laid out the New Day and just laid them to waste. And one of my more favorite food-related, holiday-related segments that the WWE's done in a long time.
Sanity, my new favorite team, because they stopped me from having to watch a pancake eating contest. So thank you for that, Sanity. Yeah, I just... The New Day are extremely charming. They're the anti-Roman Reigns, right?
Yeah.
So they can get things over that nobody else can. If anyone's a modern-day Rock or Stone Cold, it's them, right? As a team, they've gotten over pancakes, for crying out loud. So they are less cringeworthy during a rap battle or a pancake-eating competition or whatever else nonsense they do, but it still doesn't make it good. And it's not something I want to watch.
Yeah. And then we got the Battle of the Sexes, Asuka and James Ellsworth. And this was a double countout. As Ellsworth tried to flee, Asuka chased him. Because you need to keep Ellsworth looking strong?
Well, they booked a lumberjack match,
yeah,
which I'm really happy they didn't call a lumberjill match. It annoys the shit out of me. They booked that for the next week, so that's why they did it, I guess. I'm kind of okay with it. Asuka beat the hell out of him. He was never in control, so it's not like they made Ellsworth look like her equal. I am a little, just like always, when the babyface continuously looks like a dope, like James Ellsworth coming out in Asuka's robe and Asuka thinking it might be her somehow and being distracted with Carmella getting the upper hand while she was trying to chase down Ellsworth. The babyfaces, they just never look around them. They're always distracted by everything. That was the bigger problem with this to me. And I also have one other huge problem about this segment and James Ellsworth in general. He doesn't know how to wink. I have never seen a human being that I believably have to say, someone needs to tell him and show him how winking works. He somehow finds a way to make me feel uncomfortable when he does it. And it's an unbelievable eye movement for him. It's almost like it's CGI. Like, no one does that and has ever made that facial expression in real life. So James Ellsworth, there is very little you can do well, including winking, and that's a problem.
I never noticed that. Now I'm gonna have to go back and watch that too.
Go look at the video of when he interrupted in the Asuka mask and the wink he gave Asuka when she figured out it was James Ellsworth.
He like opens his mouth really wide, doesn't he?
When he opens
does
his
it.
Mouth, both his eyes go real wide. He nods his head while he's doing it. It's a whole thing. It's like he's a puppet, and it's like a 37-step process. It is the most bizarre thing. And he did it again into the mirror or something when he was talking to himself backstage. It's just, yeah. If the police ever see him do that, they will arrest him immediately and just charge him with something.
All right. So after this, we had AJ taking on Aiden English. Rusev is at ringside for this. AJ wins pretty easily with a calf crusher, but Rusev comes in and attacks afterwards and lays out AJ. I loved Rusev before the match, he cut a little nice, straightforward promo. And I like how he distracted AJ to start the match and give Aiden an advantage. Of course, it didn't ultimately work out, but I love them going, oh, AJ turns around, Aiden attacks him. You know what? Never mind. It just shows that charming charisma that Rusev has that they very rarely allow him to come out and show.
I hate to beat a dead horse, but yet I'll do it anyway. Infinitely more charismatic and likable than Roman Reigns or Bobby Lashley. Just because he said, and AJ, one more thing. Oh, never mind. Just he has a little bit of that Kevin Owens to him where you just want to like the guy. Even when he's doing bad things, even when he's booked to be a chicken shit heel that runs away from every fight, there's just something charming and interesting about his character that people gravitate to, and they continue not to pull the trigger on him as a babyface, but they're giving him a shot near the top of the card. I don't think it's going to result in anything lasting, but good for him in general. And listen, to their credit, they have booked him like a credible threat. He's won some matches leading up to this. He ended up, even though it was a distraction, he ended up getting AJ in the accolade, and he's looking strong going into this match, which is a way they could create another legitimate main eventer. Basically, the push that they gave to Jinder Mahal, had they given it to Rusev, we might be in a whole different, it might be a whole different ball game on SmackDown right now.
Oh yeah, for sure we would be. Becky Lynch took on Peyton Royce next. Becky has been on a winning streak as of recent events, beating people left and right with the disarmer. Peyton wants to put an end to that. Peyton does not put an end to that. She loses via tap out. Becky on a roll for matches and wins over a lot of good talent, too, including beating Charlotte. So building up to her possibly being the next challenger towards what you would assume probably is going to be Carmella, because Becky and Asuka seems like too quick to do another face-face women's feud.
Yeah, I like what they're doing with Becky. They're giving her, you know, weekly TV time. They're accentuating the fact that she's had some rough streak, but is now getting things back together. Peyton Royce and Billy Kay cut a promo that I did not cringe at.
Yeah.
They didn't do a terrible impression. They didn't screech and make noises that no human being should ever do. This was actually a solid heel promo that they did consistently in NXT. So that was cool. And the great thing about those two is that they have enough of an it factor, unlike the Riot Squad, unlike Absolution, where they don't necessarily need to win these matches for me to care about them. And I don't know exactly where to pinpoint that, but I feel like them losing is fine at this point, even though usually when talent's called up, you'd want to see them winning a little bit more. I think maybe they just carry themselves more as stars, so that delusional mentality makes me dislike them more. I don't know if you have any opinion on that.
I kind of see where you're going there. And yes, this promo was much better than we have seen out of them. This was a little bit more along the lines of what we were used to seeing in NXT. Their characters could be a very fine line, and maybe that's where you can so easily go from good to bad very quickly with them, because being that full of themselves, think way better than they probably are type of heel can work 95% of the time, and then the 5% that it doesn't, it's really bad and really cringy. Even though it's probably not super far off, it's just the material that you are given. That the action and the performance can seem exactly the same, but what is being said can be the thing that throws it all haywire.
Yeah.
And then we had the main event with Team Hell No beating the Usos. and a pretty decent match. I mean, Kane did what Kane is capable of doing. And then we had three pretty damn good workers in the ring there too, to solidify them as the challengers against the Bludgeon Brothers for Extreme Rules. Bludgeon Brothers came out for a little stare down afterwards to send us to Chris Lee Knows Best, I think is what came on after that.
I as well enjoyed this match. As I mentioned in the open for SmackDown, I enjoyed the entirety of this premise, setup, all that. That being said, I would be remiss if I did not point out one of the most beautiful examples of the dreaded flying nothing. A double flying nothing.
Into chokes.
The Usos do a splash, a double splash. For some reason, on this particular double splash, they decided to jump at the same time, both at the same area. So they would, if they had not had this thing happen, collide into each other.
Yeah.
They also decided not to land on their stomachs on Kane. Oh no. They decided to land on their feet. So they're and bent over. So I don't know what they were planning. At one point, I'd like to maybe sit down, have a beer, and find out. But whatever they were planning was the most beautiful example of the flying nothing that I have ever seen. And congratulations to the Usos. You are incredible performers, believable heels and baby faces who I love to watch professional wrestling. But my God, whoever set that spot up was insane.
Yeah. You put so much detail into your observation of that move.
it was profound. I saw that and I was just like, oh my God, that's like high art.
But yeah, that was SmackDown. That was TV for this week. I'll admit they could have gotten really terrible with having an American holiday upcoming. They typically do get really bad. We didn't have a food fight.
Yes.
So good on them for doing that. I remember that a couple years ago on SmackDown very vividly. And overall, we moved some stories ahead. There was some bad stuff. There was certainly Bayley and Sasha. We unfortunately cannot say that that didn't happen.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I think the point you make about the non-food fight, non-necessarily stupid holiday episode, you know, in music they say sometimes it's the notes that you don't play that make it a good song. Sometimes it's the food fights you don't have that make a wrestling show tolerable. Congratulations, WWE.
Very true, yeah. Congratulations. You deserve it. There we go. Anything else you want to talk about?
No, I think I've done enough. I think I've described, as you said, very thoroughly several things.
And,
the flying nothing and my thoughts on Bayley. So I've talked enough for this episode.
All right. Well, thank you everyone once again for joining us on this episode. Make sure that you follow us on our social media. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Miss Spots. We're always live tweeting along to Raw, SmackDown Live, and the pay-per-views. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/MissSpots. You can listen to this podcast in one of many different wonderful fashions, such as our website, MissSpotsPodcast.com, or simply MissSpots.com. We're also available on practically all of the major streaming services for podcasts, such as iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, Google Play Music, Overcast, Podcast Addict, all of them. You can subscribe to us and get brand new episodes delivered to the device of your choice every Thursday, free of charge. You can also hear us every Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central on Geek Life Radio at geekliferadio.com. For Kevin, my name's Mike. We'll catch you guys next week. Good night. Good wrestling.